Well, hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Patrick from the Poison Pen Bookstore. I know most of you, but welcome to the store. It is such a treat and an honor to have all of our good friend Deborah Ledford here to launch her brand new book, Redemption. So please help me give her a nice, warm welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Deb, it's been a good few years since your last book, and I know that you've been through quite a lot. I don't know how much you'd like to reveal or about that, or if you want to talk about that at all. But tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of what went into this book. What all went into this book?
A lot of healing first. Yep. Let's just say, So my last book was released from my previous series, the Smoky Mountain Inquest series, was released back in 2015, and then the following year, breast cancer caught me. So there was a lot of healing. There were I was not creative at all for years and years, and decided, well, I'll just be a developmental editor and help, you know, mentor the people that are, you know, up and coming, who I, you know, really want to see succeed, and figured I have my finger in still in the creative element, but nothing creative was coming. So this happened really so very quickly. It was crazy. So in 2022, last year, our very good friend Isabella Maldonado, who is a, you know, best-selling author.
She's a big star now.
She's a big star. She's a big star.
And we knew her when.
I edited all of her manuscripts, and she was a speech reader
awesome.
On mine, and vetted all of my police officer elements. And then I've got another shout out for Chuck Miller, M-I-I-L-L-E-R. Of course, the publisher spelled his name incorrectly in the acknowledgments, but you know, they always do. So he's used to it. But anyway, it took a while. She contacted me in April last year and you know, just a catch up call, and you know, hey, how you doing? Are you feeling creative yet? And it's like, no, not yet. I'm good. You know, I'm just enough, you know, in the literary world that I'm good. And then we were talking and catching up. And she says, well, when do you think you will be creative? I'm like, what's going on? And so she told me that her agent knew of several editors at publishing houses that they were looking for what I write, you know, natives writing about natives. And so, you know, and I'm like, no, that's too much pressure, too much pressure. And because my brain, even to this day, is still retraining, I have to be very, very careful with how much time I spend, you know, focusing on certain elements. So it was kind of, nah. And then she said, well, just think about it. And John, my husband over here, is like, you better be thinking about it, you know, because it's time to get back to work. Apparently, I can get cranky. But you got to have that outlet, right? So I had an idea, and I did a 3-page synopsis, first five chapters, sent it to Bella, and I said, "Is this okay? What do we think?" And she said, "Yes." Sent it, introduced me to her agent. That was like on a Saturday. We had a call I had a call with the agent on Sunday, and she picked it up right away. She sent it to, and we discussed, you know, the four publishing houses that she had in mind. And I said, well, I want Bella's publisher because they're so good to her, which is Thomas and Mercer, and they're, you know, Amazon publishing. So, that was my main thing, is that I felt like I could be creative again, but when it came to the marketing, it was like, ugh. So, I'm fine talking to you because I love you. I adore you. You have hosted me every book since 2009.
You say that to all the boys.
No, I don't.
Go back.
Yeah, we do a long way. And then they picked it up. And then I had 4 months to write it. So it was
4 months.
Yeah, from April they picked it up. August 15th was my first deadline. Oh, there's Isabella Maldonado. We were just talking about you.
Making an entrance.
Yeah, making an entrance. Now you'll have to watch the YouTube channel and the Facebook channel. But yeah, so it's been great. It's been a great ride, and you know, all due to Isabella Maldonado, because let me tell you what, it was not even on my radar really to even start writing again.
Well, you know, I mean, it's so cool these days. There's like a renaissance in Native writers being published in genre fiction, which is really great to see. You know, I mean, you got people, I wrote down my little cheat sheet, but Ramona Emerson, Dene Navajo
fantastic
writer, has a killer book called Shudder.
Shudder. Oh.
Rebecca Roanhorse. What else we got here? Marsha Renborn, Stephen Graham Jones, you know, really... you know, a trailblazer in kind of the horror genre. Yeah.
Yep. And then I got a very, very nice blurb.
I'll let you say the name.
Well, I have to read it because I don't want to mess it up. But it's from David Henske Wanblee Wyden. Winter Counts is a spectacular Native American novel. Spectacular. And that, you know, that won all the awards. Shudder won a ton of awards. So there has been and really, Thomas and Mercer is so open as far as, like with Isabella, with her, you know, she's got two series with them now too, right? And, Hispanic, writing about Hispanics and a Latina, and they give you, Thomas and Mercer gave us the opportunity to really speak for and about our people. The inclusivity has been really, really amazing. I mean, they have spoiled me. I mean, I'm just blown away at every turn.
Well, I mean, they have an amazing, you know, a lot of resources at their disposal.
This is true.
They, you know, great editors, really smart people working there.
Right.
So it's like, as an independent, you know, at first we like wanted to hate them.
I know.
But
I know, right?
Now we love them. We work with a lot with Thomas and Mercer authors, you know, and the other imprint, Lake Union, I think it is.
Lake House, maybe it is Lake
Union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's another house too, but.
They do some wonderful stuff.
Yeah, I think Thomas and Mercer alone, I mean, I think there are at least 12 imprints from Amazon.
Are there
publishing.
Really?
There's a lot.
Yeah, Lee Goldberg is another one. He's going to be here next week with his brother. So, great publisher. Jessica Tribble, who used to work for the Poison Pen Press, is now a big editor over there.
Yep, she's a big wig.
Which is great.
Yeah, I got to see her again at the BoucherCon conference in San Diego last month. So, yeah, she's doing great. She's loving it.
So let's talk a little bit about the area and the people that you chose for this book, the Tiwa Pueblo tribe. Can you talk about a little bit about why you kind of dialed in on them and that particular region?
So the Taos Pueblo is about a mile north of Taos, you know, the town of Taos. And their original dwellings, there's a north house and a south house, they have been around for over 1,000 years. So... when I wrote Snare, which is book two from my previous series, I knew that I wanted a different Native American rather than my lead, who was Eastern Band Cherokee in North Carolina. That's where the first series takes place. So I knew that I needed a different tribe. I was really looking for somewhere I could go and do the research, actually, to drive to. So I knew I couldn't do... Arizona, because of course, you know, Hillerman's got that covered. So I did more research about in New Mexico. I was raised in New Mexico. I grew up in New Mexico. And so I kind of thought maybe, you know, that might be a good idea too down the line.
Good to pick a beautiful place rather than like a tribe around Yuma somewhere.
Yeah, let's not do that. That had something to do with it too.
Actually, I really like Yuma. It gets a bad rap.
It does. But, So I was able to make connections there for that one, and that really is the only way that I was able to write Redemption so quickly, is that I already had my contacts there to vet and approve and run things by, and then also I had already accomplished so much research, still had to do a few trips for this one. But primarily, that was to really focus on my contact there and you know, I want to do this, I want to do this, and it's the yes or the no. You don't, you mourn over the no because you're, you know, I've already got things figured out, and then now it's like, oh boy, I'm going to need to fix that a little bit. So nothing that goes on in redemption has any, you know, they aren't real people. They are completely from my imagination. They are, you know, an amalgam of others, people that I've met there and otherwise. But the location worked out. It worked out really well. It's the only way that I was able to write this one so fast.
Gotcha. Now, you do have a protagonist in the book. We'll talk about her, Eva Duran. Mm-hmm. But it really is an ensemble cast. I don't know. Can you talk a little bit about Eva? And we also have various different branches of law enforcement here.
Right.
You know, I think there are, what, four? Three?
There's three. Yeah.
Sheriff's Department, Taos Police Department, and the Tribal Police.
Right. And there's actually even another branch that I don't go into, which is the Taos Pueblo also has a Sheriff's Department. So, but I don't go there. They are their own entity. But Eva is actually a sheriff's deputy with the Taos County. And that's primarily because in her reign, there are no females on the Pueblo force. So it's very much, you know, it was, let's say, a little more amenable for her to work for the county rather than for her tribe. And so therefore she is kind of the bridge between if there's anything between, that happens, between the county or the city, right? And on the Pueblo, she's the peacekeeper. So they call on her, and that's really how the book starts. You know, chapter two takes place actually on the Gorge Bridge, which it's a real location there that's on the cover. So
yeah, no, it features into the story in several very important places. But some of the little details were very authentic sound, you know, feeling, you know, when you have Eva gets heat from other people because she lives off the reservation, that just felt like a really true detail, even though she's, you know, full-blooded member of the tribe.
Right. And that is very, very common because there is no industry on the Taos Pueblo, on the reservation, with a lot of reservations. People are having to leave in order to, you know, support their families, unfortunately. Artisans are they do very, very well for the tourists. There are hundreds of thousands of tourists that come by every year to do the tours and so forth, and the powwows and, you know, events that are open to the public. So it's very difficult. So people are having to, which is, you know, driving down the population. Traditions are being forgotten, languages are being neglected, and it's happening. I mean, it's a real thing.
Right. Now, let's see. I mean, at the heart of the book is this mysterious character, Paloma Ario.
Ario.
You know, she was a champion hoop dancer and traveled the Indian festival circuit. And very much a celebrity in that culture.
Right.
How does she figure into the book?
So Paloma and Eva, and then Cruz Romero. Cruz Romero is a tribal officer, and that's Ava's on and off again, you know, love. The three of them grew up together, I mean, from birth. So the three of them are very tight. However, what happened was there was a vehicle accident. Paloma's husband was killed, as well as three other hoop dancers, and Paloma was injured, and
it just destroys her.
It does. It absolutely breaks her, and she becomes addicted to oxy and then heroin. And so that's why that really is the germination of the actual story. So it starts out, we get the crazy person first, and then chapter two is then we get, because I always start with the villain, because it's like I give them their fair due. So we could you can hate to love to hate them right away. And then we go into, you know, what this is about. So essentially, Paloma's 18-year-old son, he cannot convince anyone that his mother has, she's gone, she's missing. she's not just off, you know, doing drugs with her three friends. There is something definitely wrong. And so that prompts, something happens to prompt her to join in and allow him on the periphery to help look for his mom, because no one else is looking for her. So she's risking her badge. She's risking her relationship with the tenuous relationships with her people on the Pueblo. You know, it's kind of a mess, but you know, she feels very, very strongly that Paloma is definitely in trouble.
Right. And you bring this story very current, up to date, you know, with what's going on, has been going on the last 4 or 5 years with the, you know, the effect of the pandemic on the reservation, various different reservations, right?
Right. Yeah, and in book two, the one I'm working on now, Havoc is the title. We go into it even more because it's, you know, they've opened a new graveyard, and essentially it's filling up fast. So it's kind of the after effects of, you know, what it took to break people. I mean, there are so many broken people. You know, the healthcare industry, my antagonist is a nurse practitioner who her main goal is to solve the problem on the reservation and cure cure Native Americans of their heroin and opioid addictions. And she gets it into her head, this is what I'm going to do. This is why I'm here. I've lost so many patients due to COVID. I'm gonna make this right. And then that's kind of her backstory.
And her name's Alice Jones.
Yes, it is.
It's a great, great name.
Thank you. She's crazy.
She, yeah, and she's, the craziness is kind of doled out in small little doses. So, you know, it's like one of those people you're like,
something's not quite right with you.
Something's not quite right. Something's not quite connecting here.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I hate to say, was she inspired by any particular person, or maybe a news story? Because you do hear stories kind of like this.
Right. I know a lot of people in the healthcare industry. My mother and sister-in-law. My sister-in-law is still a nurse, and I've got our lovely couple back here. Michelle is also she makes sure that babies come into the world safely. So yeah, I know I kind of know the mindset. Of course, not being involved in the, you know, in the medical field whatsoever, but I kind of get it, you know.
Well, and also, as I said, the book deals with addiction in a big way. Can you talk a little bit maybe about, obviously you have a lot of friends you can go to for some of those details, but more of the psychology of the addict, you know, what it feels like, what drives them, the Jones, if you will. Yeah.
Hey, that works. Alice Jones? Yeah,
Mrs. Jones.
It's really, that's an interesting question because it becomes all encompassing. I mean, there is nothing else that the addict thinks about, you know. I mean, I'm a former alcoholic. I'm just going to go out there and say that I've been in recovery for 23 years now. And I mean, I know I have been there. I have completely been there where it's like nothing matters except how can I get what makes me feel good, or turns off the switch, or so Paloma certainly deals with that throughout. It's the, I have a kid, oh God, today's his birthday, I hope that someone is there to love him. But not only is she being held captive, she probably wouldn't be there even if she was off on her own.
Well, and it's interesting that the three friends that she's with, you know, they all, they're all important in the book. I mean, because they all, one of them's a basket maker, you know, one of them's a makes jewelry, you know, and they kind of, at least the way I read it in a way, they kind of symbolize the loss of these traditions.
Exactly. Know? Yeah. And another is the drum maker. Making is very, very big on the Taos Pueblo. And right, it's using everything that is available to you in order to create something beautiful. And that also is hoop dancing. I mean, it's you're using your body to create beauty, and something that Alice Jones fell in love with and wanted to be connected to before she realized, oh, that's who I want to cure. And that's when really flips the switch, where it's far as now she's got to do it.
Yeah, she's like part Kathy Bates, part Nurse Ratched, you know.
Ooh, Kathy Bates. I'm going to steal this, Patrick.
Sorry. Now, the kid, Paloma's son, Kai, and I don't want to give you the whole book here, but these are really compelling, little tidbits. Kai is 18 years old, extremely smart, he had to drop out of high school. Well, you tell us. I mean, he had a scholarship, right?
Right. He has got a scholarship for the University of New Mexico, Taos, so nearby. But he's willing to give that all up, because he is so driven to find his mom and to, see through that she's going to be okay with recovery and so forth and so on. But Kai is really smart. He's a biology guy. His full intent, what he wants to do is to learn more about the plants that are indigenous on the reservation and learn how to heal people and cure people and make people well, maybe make them sick. It depends on who you are in his life. But it's kind of the parallel a little bit with Alice Jones in that, the cure, so forth and so on, because they're both, they've been so immersed in, the illness and sickness and so forth, that they want to find a way to help in as much as they possibly can.
And his father, Kai's dad, and this is all established really early on, but Kai's father that was killed in the car crash was a different tribe. He was Navajo. Right. And so Kai's got that kind of going against him in some ways.
Right, because he's not full blood.
Right.
There are certain traditions and celebrations on the Pueblo. If you're not full blooded, you cannot attend. So even if, we're talking, a mother or a father, they aren't allowed. I mean, into the kivas and so forth and so on. There's a lot of traditions that they want only for the, and I don't know, I mean, I really don't know if that's to enhance the necessity for keeping, the tribe, as one, as it has been for over 1,000 years. But anyway, it's, he certainly feels like an outsider, very much like Ava, because she has somewhat been shunned because she's not working on, she lives off the reservation. She comes on to the land, the sovereign, crosses the sovereign boundary line only when she's called in, so it's, it's a little contentious from sometimes.
You craftily put a body on the on the border between, and so no one's sure which jurisdiction
has the and that's really important, because that also allows Ava to investigate, because that's county land, and also Cruz Romero. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but we think maybe it is. So right. So there's we now have to work together to try and figure this out.
You know, it's funny, one of the best experiences I've ever had, my wife and I went up to the Hopi, we like to go up to the Hopi mesas from time to time, and, the Hopi, they're really fascinating people, and, they're not big promoters, to outsiders. So you can't go on Hopi Facebook and find out when their Kachina dances, but we knew that there was one coming up. This is like maybe 10 years ago. We knew that there's usually one on the summer solstice, a big dance, either on Third Mesa. So we went up there, nothing, and we drove around to some convenience store. They're like, oh yeah, there's one like 50 miles that way, And so we went, and it was so awesome. Yeah, we were like, there were maybe, maybe 20 white people there. Or, from outside, but, the Kachinas would all come around and you cannot take pictures, and they will beat you with reeds and stuff.
Right.
But seeing that whole all-day ceremony was really something.
That's spectacular. I mean, that never happens. You are very fortunate to have caught that.
It was crazy. And sorry to tell you all this, but
it's fascinating.
I can't. At the end of the night, you know, they all go out, all the kachinas, they go out single file, and you're not supposed to follow them. And so we're driving away, and my wife Sandra goes, "Look." And I'm like, "Oh." And you see this big kiva, and they're individually going up and into the kiva, you know. Ooh. And it was so, so cool.
Oh, I completely see that.
Yeah, I love the way they look at the world,
amazing.
You know.
That's amazing.
And the Pueblo people, of course, very related.
Yes.
Let's see. Got my little crazy notes here. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about because there's obviously, when you're writing crime fiction from a Native perspective, there are certain taboos that I imagine you have to kind of dance around a little bit or skirt. You know, a lot of death taboos, things like that.
Right.
Does that get tricky when you're writing crime fiction?
It really does, especially, yeah.
For Ramona Emberson, it sure does.
Right. Yeah, she kind of goes there.
She goes there.
Because she can. I mean, she's full-blood Dene. So
yep.
For me, book two is especially that way in that I really have to be careful because it involves the death of, you know, of a Pueblo member off the reservation, I mean, in Santa Fe. So it's, you know, when it's off the reservation, my contact was a Taos Pueblo police officer, and I mean, he had to go to Albuquerque, primarily Albuquerque, to bring bodies back for burial. Over 200 bodies in his short stint. And so, you know, because again, you know, they're off the reservation and they have no connection with their people. And so things go awry, or, you know, they get forgetful, or they get stupid, or silly, or, you know, not paying attention to the ways of what has kept them alive for generations and generations. So, it's a little difficult. So yeah, so and that's why I worked really, really diligently with my contact on Snare, because it was my first foray into diving into a different different tribe, and you know, he would tell me things and his wife would tell me things, and then he's got three kids, they would tell me things, and I'm like, oh, this is fast, I could write 12 books just on your stories. And then I'm saying every now and then, okay, I could make this work, can I use this? And he's like, no. I was like, what? Well, but what about if I changed it? No. And then another story, what about this one? No. And it's like, why are you telling me these stories if I can't use this stuff? And he said, it's about building trust. It's about building trust and respect. It's a little bit of a test, a little bit of a dance, so forth and so on. But when it's, yeah, you can do that, it's like, oh, because then I can get to work.
So, you know, just kind of reiterate here, as the book opens, I think we're about 10 or 12 days or so, I think, into this group of four women that has disappeared, Paloma and her three friends, all drug addicts. And so we start this sort of, you proceed with the story alternating back and forth really in a really interesting way between different points of view to tell the story. How did you settle on that? Was it just, you know, back and forth, villain, hero, villain, you know, that
and
kind
in
of
a
thing.
Way, so I love an Excel spreadsheet because they are all multiple points of view. There's a lot of driving, So when Ava's driving from one location to another, I need to put something in. You know, I need to go to a different character. What's going on as Ava's going from one part of the reservation or the city or the county? You know, what's happening in her world that is driving the entire story. So it is all multiple points of view. Just about everything I write takes place no less than 3 days' time. So things have to move. They have to go. They have to go. They have to move. And the spreadsheet is great because I'm OCD. And So I even color code my characters as I'm saying, you know, chapter one, two, and then I have the time. And if there's three Ava chapters, it's like, oh, nope, I need to stick somebody else in there to give them a little bit of page time, and to make it more of a seamless flow, so that all of the characters are being considered, what's going on in their minds at that time.
And if this wasn't enough, there's a really cool, a cool little subplot that you throw in, which is very timely, about the 3D printing of firearms that's occurring. Is there's a police officer here that could probably speak to that too? You know, I've heard a lot of that has been going on.
It's huge.
Untraceable, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, ghost guns. That is the main plot of book two. So I dropped in, you know, little snippets of, you know, ongoing situations that become.
Does Nathan continue?
I can't tell you.
He's like a little Chucky. He's kind of like running.
Right?
How old is he? He's like
he's
seven.
Eight.
He's eight. He's like this little Chucky kind of guy with
long
fast head. Runner, and he's just like booking throughout the
right.
book.
It's... And that's the only character really that comes to mind that I have seen in our neighborhood. It's a little, he's fearless. He's on his little BMX bike and just, I mean, so the visual of that kid, I kind of took that visual and made him as real as I could because I, you know, see him every day.
Have you seen that movie, Fast Runner? I don't know if anybody's seen that. It was made with all Inuit cast. Have you seen it?
I don't know if I know.
Filmmaker, and it's translated. You know, they do everything down to a T. And it's based on one of their creation stories, Fast Runner. And so
check
the guy
out.
Just runs throughout the ice, you know. And oh, it's really great. It's Shakespearean kind of in a way.
Do you have it here?
Excuse me?
Do you have that book here?
It's not a book. It's a film. It was based on one of their stories. Yeah,
that's
really
cool.
Yeah,
storytelling it's amazing. And, you know, we were talking about language a little bit. So the Taos Pueblo, their language is not written down. Any words that I put in there, I use them, you know, infrequently. And Floyd, my contact, he's okay. I say this very, very slowly because I'm going to write it out phonetically, because it's not written. And so the storytelling, I mean, it's a masterclass, you know, because that's how they convey their information and their traditions.
Now, let's see, Eva and certainly Kai, I think they all have their kind of native name. Single Star is Kai's. Was it fun coming up with those?
It was a blast. And I kind of did a little turn around the hoop dancer. Her name is White Dove, right? But Ava's name is Lightning Dance. So the dancing element is kind of switched a little bit, and I did that on purpose. But I love the tagline that Thomas and Mercer came up with. So it's Ava Lightning Dance Duran. She's the storm no one saw coming. And it's like that's her. I mean that is the epitome of her character. So yeah, Lightning Dance is Ava.
And there seems to be, you know, there are several characters. Actually, all the characters in the book. Yeah, whatever. They seem to be tuned into a kind of certain frequency, you know, like the native frequency where it's like it's almost like a form of ESP, mm-hmm. you know. It's
yeah.
like you know, something's happened to so and so, or
right.
I don't feel their presence here.
Exactly, and that's the whole thing. That's a lot is the presence. It's that's how Kai really really. You know, his mom, Paloma, has been gone before. She has disappeared on numerous occasions, but she's been gone for 12 days now. And at the point where he has to make Ava pay attention, he's ready to end it all because he does not feel her spirit anymore. And that's really that's the only way that he can get people to really, really understand is that when he says, I don't feel her. I don't feel her. And that, I mean, any Native Americans that I've ever met, I mean, you know, even just walking, you know, they'll look, they'll get, you know, I get the look, you know, just, you know. But on the reservation, very much so, because they are so interconnected. And there's also, you know, the you know, it's the Moccasin Telegraph. You know, it's stated many times, and certainly true on the Taos Pueblo. You know, there are no secrets. There are no secrets. There are no secrets. So, and you know, once one person knows, the aunties know. The you know, the little kids know. The elders know. And as we know, even when we gossip or, you know, translate a story that may or may not be true, it suddenly becomes true. So it's...
And the relationship with the weather in particular is such an intimate one.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we drove up to Colorado recently and didn't go quite where you were, but we went up through the Navajo Reservation, you know, and went up, skirting Canyon de Chelly and going up over the
so
rise
beautiful.
And then to Shiprock. And the monsoons were rolling in, and it was just like this unbelievable, it was like a theater
right.
everywhere.
And there is no sky like New Mexico sky, especially northern New Mexico sky, that deep, deep turquoise blue. And then, you know, I described the clouds, you know, they look like whipped cream that have, you know, coming out of a aerosol can. You know, there's nothing like it. And, yeah, and then the rain at 4 o'clock almost every day. We were there the first three trips we went to the Taos area. Okay, it's 4 o'clock. It's going to rain. It's going to rain. It's going to rain. It doesn't always last very long, but it's almost guaranteed to see those clouds start roiling and broiling in the air. Oh, my God. It's spectacular. I mean, you can feel the energy. You can feel it.
Yeah. Boy, well, we can't really say that much more about this book without completely spoiling it for you folks. It really is a terrific read, and
thank you, Patrick.
I can't wait to see. I know because I read the end of the book. Kind of the direction you might be going,
right?
But what can you tell us about the book two?
I think I could tell what she does. Don't
okay.
you think? I think I could. Just as a prompt for book two is she does actually become a Taos Pueblo police officer. And she's able to serve her people more fully as a, you know, as a full-fledged member of the tribe. Yep.
And you mentioned that the plot deals with more in depth with this firearms thing.
Yes. Yep.
Anything
yep.
else going on?
Oh yeah. Oh, it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. It's exciting. So I'm working on the developmental edits right now. Hello, editor. If you're tuning in, my acquiring editor and my developmental editor believed that there's a little too much going on with book two. So, I've set aside, okay, I'll be specific, 17,000 words I had to take out of this book two that I presented for a hopeful book three. We're going to be, you know, let's hope so. It's a two-book deal, but, you know, we're going to be positive. So now it's going to be more defining the crime of the 3D printing and what happens with that and you know, the motivation behind who is doing it and why. So it's more, it will be even more police procedural than the first one. And so, yeah, it's coming along really well. It's getting very tight.
And you have some good... I know you have some good friends in your stable that you can go to for any firearm
yep.
questions
yep.
or
absolutely
you know, procedural things.
Yep.
You do not want to get
I saw
that
Tracy,
stuff
my crime scene. Professional is there. I've got people on speed dial, and they're so lovely and wonderful because it takes so many people to write a book. I mean, especially if you want to be true to what you're writing about, and you know, it is fiction. There isn't anyone there are no characters that are real. The names are real, but I took them from the 1929 to 1940 census, you know, the Taos Pueblo rolls, and the same surnames to this day. So I know I'm going to get letters. It's like, hey, you're writing about me. I'm like, no, I'm really not. I'm writing about your name. But I don't know you. So, yeah.
They want some royalties, right? Chunk
let's
of the
hope
action.
Not. Let's hope not.
You know, any chance of a film or TV? It seems like it sure would lend itself to that.
I mean, you know, our agent you know, has contacted someone. But who knows? I mean, it would be lovely. It would be good for Native American talent if the production companies would hire Native Americans.
Right.
That's really the only unfortunate part is that, you know, there are a lot of characters, and really only, you know, one or two Caucasians, and, you know, a sprinkling of Hispanic characters as well. So I would love it. It would be spectacular and wonderful. What happened?
The good thing, though, is you can sell the rights and then they lapse and you can sell them again, right?
This is true. Yeah. Who is it that says just sit back and cash the check? You know, don't get involved. Sit back and cash the check.
What about foreign sales? I know that the French in particular and the Italians, too, are really interested in novels about the West.
Right. And also Japanese culture, they love it. And Germans love everything Native American.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, I hope so. I know our agent's on it. And there's no doubt about that. And I'm not really sure how that works, if that's the publisher who intervenes or if it's my representative. I'm not sure. It's early days. We're not even a month completely out yet.
Right.
Come on. Well, it can all play, right? The world can play.
Yeah. So let's open it up to questions from you guys. I was afraid of this.
Yeah. Look at all these people. Isn't really happy. Yeah. Thank you. Some faces I haven't seen in a long time.
We'll make it a tag meeting, as they say. No.
The title, Redemption. Okay. So I love a one-word title. I love a one-word title that can mean more than one thing. And essentially, Redemption, it's, you know, Ava being redeemed as a police officer or as a, you know, law enforcement officer. It's Paloma trying to redeem herself with her family and her son. For me, it's a little bit of redemption that, you know, hey, I'm back. I think I can do it again. I love it.
Was that your title?
It was.
Okay.
They did.
Wow.
And what's interesting, okay, so Thomas and Mercer has about 150 different teams, right? And my acquiring editor, once we found out that Redemption was going to be on Amazon First Reads, which is huge, she said, okay, what are you thinking about for the title of the second one? And so I kind of, actually, Ronnie Olson helped me with the title. And it was Havoc we came up with. And another one-word, there she is, another one-word title. And then, I don't know, it was like 3 weeks later, I haven't heard. And I emailed my editor and I said, so is this Havoc? Do I need to be thinking of something different? Never heard back. And then, just out of curiosity, I checked the Amazon page and it had book two as Havoc. So it's like, oh, I guess they approved Havoc. So you know, little dribs and drabs, you find these really cool information out. Yeah.
I got to ask you before we go on. There's a great detail in the book about the Fallen Crosses, which I thought would have been an awesome title, by the way.
Oh. Hey. Oh.
I get 10%.
Book four.
No, yeah. Talk about that.
Okay,
about that.
That is, and I go into that even more in Snare, book two of the other series. But essentially, and this is real, this is an absolute belief. The very old graveyard, the original graveyard, which is now just ruins. They are very, very simple crosses, white crosses, just a cross. And once the cross falls, this is years and years and years, once it falls, it has to stay within the boundary of the graveyard. So a non-native, again, non-natives are the only people, unless there's a burial ceremony, who are allowed in the graveyard. They will take it to what is remaining of the church, the original church, and lean it up against the wall there. So tradition states, and their storytelling and so forth, is that when the cross falls, the spirit is then allowed or able to leave and go elsewhere. So it's very cool. This gentleman?
you have ideas for the book before you had you had this been percolating a little bit even before you were contacting?
Michelle doesn't know this, and neither does Brandon, but there's a scene that has to do with the bridge that happened. We were coming back from their wedding, and so how long have you been married now? 3 years. So 3 years ago, it was percolating in my mind. It was a horrifying situation. John and I were driving, and I don't know, should I tell it? Okay. So we were driving from San Diego home, and one lane was closed, and there were a bunch of police officers, so we're crawling around, and there was a young man sitting on the guardrail, very sharp drop. And it touched me profoundly, because there's nothing worse than seeing something like that in real life. So I held on to it, I percolated, I thought maybe, you know, if I was ever up to writing a book 5 of the Smoky Mountain and Quest series, that's where it would start. And so I think it was kind of verification that, okay, you have this idea, you need to tell it in another character's point of view. So that's what prompted it. That I already had the germination of an idea that I believed could become actually something. Thanks for getting married.
Christina, do you have a question?
The best.
Isabella, thank you. You told me that you have to watch the beginning to hear what she said. So thank you for pushing her. And now finally to you. What author, what character was the most favorite for you to write and why?
Well, let me just repeat it. What character was your favorite to write?
Well, Ava, for sure. I feel like we really connected, and I looked out for her, and she looked out for me. I really feel a deep connection. I mean, I loved Enola from my first series. She was a badass. And but Ava is a little more approachable. She's more female energy. So it was more of a connection for me with her. I love Paloma too. I love them all. I love them all. And Kai, I love Kai. I even love Santiago. My friend Norma is here, and I didn't even make the connection. It's like, that's Norma's last name. Well, it's Santiago's first name. It's Santi. So even him, you know, even the, you know, the hardcore, he's rough councilman. He's got a guarded heart. So, yeah.
Other questions?
And take her from beginning to end, and then go back and take Alice from beginning to end? Or are they, when you're writing it, are they interacting and listening together?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So for the synopsis, I knew kind of the template. I knew the highlights that I needed to hit, because that's the book I sold. But there's all that in between, all the puzzle making. So since everything is linear, all of the timeline happens, you know, one scene after another, I did scene by scene by scene. So I did the, you know, the character hopping as I wrote. But there were times where it's like, oh, okay, Ava's really, really talking to me. I know what needs to happen. You know, I'm working on chapter 30, but I know that this needs to happen chapter 50. So I will then go in and say, you know, further on down the line, Ava needs to do this or so forth. Especially because it was such a tight deadline. I really, really, you know, if I needed a note, I put it in there. It's, you know, and then I made it work, you know.
You wrote this in 4 months?
4 months. And I'm still standing.
What was your daily grind? It was 10,000 words.
It was 2,000 words a day. I mean, it was, and it, you know, like I said, I had to be really, really careful, because it would be, okay, he's better now, but we have a dragon. It's an Australian Shepherd and Husky mix. So he has to have, even to this day, the first, you know, until 9 a.m., he has to have the undivided attention. So, but from 9 o'clock to 10, about 10, 11, sometimes 12. I sometimes can get 4 good hours in, And then I have to take a nap. I literally have to take a nap. But I use that time for my subconscious to work, too, because if I'm stuck, it's kind of, you know, and you writers out there know that it really is helpful to, you know, before you're going to take your little nap or go to bed, you know, sleep for the, at the end of the night, work through your mind. Okay, this isn't working for me. Figure it out. I know it's in my subconscious somewhere, so help me figure it out. And then almost always there will be something that I will wake up and write a note about. So then I'll go back in and do another couple hours, then have dinner, and then like from 6 to 8 kind of review a little bit of what I had done that day. So it got to be a lot. And that was, you know, essentially 6 days a week.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the writers often get that outlining question. I hate to say plotter. What is it? Pantser? Oh, man. I don't like that term.
No, I don't like it either.
But it makes sense. So it sounds like you're kind of mainly a plotter, but with elements of pantser.
Right, right. For this, I mean, but that's the first time I've been that. I mean, for my first series, it was strictly, you know, you pantser. Sit down and figure it out as it goes. So it that was helpful. It was very, very helpful to keep me to be the roadmap, really. It is, because you know who the killer is. I mean, there are other options of who it could be, but it's very, very, and I mean, there are all kinds of definitions of what a mystery and a thriller is. But for the most part, a thriller, you know who the killer is, and it's you're following along with the protagonist to catch the killer, right? And there's a lot more going on, of course, too. Also, because it's a fast, you know, fast timeline, that kind of denotes it's going to be a thriller. Police procedural, because police are, you know, it's an investigation involved. And mystery too, because you're not quite totally sure, right? So it's everything. But psychological suspense has always been, you know, my first go-to, as far as, you know.
You know, didn't Thomas Harris kind of really write the template with, you know, Silence of the Lambs or for that? I mean, what a perfect structure.
Right. Perfect.
You know?
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, has your approach to writing thrillers changed? You've been doing it. You've been writing thrillers for a long time.
Right.
Do you approach them differently now than you did?
Can you repeat the question just for the people that are watching?
Sure. Has my
approach to thriller writing or to writing changed?
Right, changed from over the years. I don't think so. I think really the love of it. I mean, that's really. I mean, when I was young, I read almost exclusively literary, you know, books, literature, and. And so, but I always had the love for crime fiction, you know, and Twilight Zone and stuff like that growing up as a kid. So that was always there, you know, that interest was always there. But then, you know, start pitching agents way back in the day, and they're like, well, what does your work remind you of? You know, who, what author, you know, do you emulate or so forth? And it's like, I don't know. I'm just trying to write a good story. So there was a lot of catching up to do as far as reading people who are, you know, thriller and mystery writers. I think it's the comfort in knowing I don't need to pigeonhole what I'm writing. You know, it doesn't have to be, it's only going to be a mystery, or it's only going to be a police procedural, or it's only going to be a thriller. It can be all three. It really, because all people want is a good read, right?
Any other questions? You're probably like, my phone is guilting me saying time to stand, which maybe
don't ignore your step count.
But if there are no more questions, maybe we should break up and have you sign some books for us.
Sure, I'd love that.
And everybody, you should have received a number with your book. If not, no big deal. But yeah, if you wouldn't mind just kind of folding up your chairs and putting them against the the wall. That would
thank
be
you,
great.
Everybody. Oh,
and
my
thanks
gosh.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. This is a great crowd. Look at all the people.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.